This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. And just in time for Valentine's Day, get $15 off the engraving chrome Winston set by entering the code CAMPFIREVALENTINE. That's one word, CAMPFIREVALENTINE at checkout. Again, that money-saving code is CAMPFIREVALENTINE. And you do that at checkout. We'll talk more about it in just a bit. Thanks, Harry's.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I'm Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And boy, do we have some great spooky stories for you this week. I hope that you'll sign up to tell your spooky story on the show as we go forward. And to do that, it's very simple. Just go over to jimharold.com/campfire. That's jimharold.com/campfire. And just pick one of the convenient times listed there, and you too could be on the program. And speaking of storytellers, let's get right to them. Here's some great stories around the campfire. Marie's on the line. She's a longtime listener back from 2009, a Plus Club member, and we're very appreciative of her support all these years. She has two stories. First, and I don't think we've ever had one about this, a haunted movie theater, and then she's going to talk about another one about a haunted house. Marie, welcome to the program. Thank you so much, and tell us these stories.
Oh, okay. Thank you for having me. Oh, yeah. So the first one took place in a movie theater. This was back when I was like in my mid-20s. I'm not exactly sure how old the movie theater is, but I do remember it being there ever since like I was a kid. But I started working there, and me and some of my other friends, we decided it'd be a good idea if maybe we had like a sleepover at the movie theater after everything had closed down. And one of my friends was a manager, so she had the keys and everything. So there was a handful of us, and, you know, we're all in our mid-20s. There's a lot of hormones going everywhere. So I think this explains why we forgot our friends. So we decided to play hide-and-seek in the movie theater. So we all paired up and went to hide, and whoever was it, I don't know, they went around looking for people. But my friend, the manager who had the keys, paired off with another girl who worked there, and they went to hide inside one of the theaters.
Right.
And they said that they had hid there for a long time. I don't remember exactly how long they were there, but they said we were hiding for a long time. And in truth, we kind of forgot about them. You know, there were cute boys. There were other things to do.
I got you.
And they said, finally, after a while, they heard the door open. And then they got excited. They're like, okay, somebody's coming. And they heard, you know, footsteps. It sounded like somebody had gone through one of the aisles and sat down in one of the chairs. They said they even saw, like, an M&M kind of tumble down the aisle way. So they said, okay, we're going to count to three, and then we're going to jump up and scare them, okay? And then their friend said, yeah, it's a good idea. So they counted, and then they jumped up and said, boo, but nobody was there.
Ooh, so maybe they're the ones that got scared.
Yeah, really. So then my friend kind of looks at the other girl, and she's like, you heard somebody come in, right? And she said, yeah. So then they kind of looked at each other, and then they said, let's get out of here. So then when they left the movie theater to find us, we were just kind of like in the lobby, just, you know, talking and hanging out. And they were like, did any of you guys come to look for us? And we were like, you know, we felt guilty. We said, oh, no, we didn't. So then they just kind of sat down, and we were really quiet. I thought they were mad at us, but like after we left the movie theater, because they didn't want to tell us as well, we were still in there. But after we left the movie theater, that's when my friend told me what happened.
Ooh. And, you know, a movie theater, that would seem like, you know, something particular if it's an older movie theater, I could see something like that haunted. And even now, I don't know if this was that kind of movie theater, but a lot of the movie theaters, really old ones, used to actually have live shows in them before the movie. And we did a whole show, not so much on movie theaters, although there might have been some in there, with Tom Ogden some time ago on Haunted Theater. So that certainly is spooky. And that seems, okay. You know, when you were describing it, it seemed like to me, you know, one of those like old Friday the 13th movies, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like about the right age and you know, everything. It's like, luckily it didn't get to that point. It didn't get to that point. So I know, I know you also had a story about a haunted house.
Yeah. This one's a little bit longer. This goes back to my friend who was living in living in Brookline, Massachusetts, and this is a very rich neighborhood, and I think it has been for a while because when he moved into the neighborhood, he and his family moved into this very large house, and it was huge, and it had like a huge backyard. So needless to say, there were some rich people who built this, and I met him like around middle school, and you know, he had his bar mitzvah at the house, so I was able to see it. And he didn't invite people over often, but I had been over a couple times since then. But he did say that like there was something about the house. Like he would tell me since middle school, we were friends all throughout high school also. And he would tell me that he and his sister just experienced a lot of things in the house, like here and there. Mostly what he said was he would hear footsteps coming from the attic, and he had two dogs, Fluffy and Bambi. And he said what they would do is they would go to the top of the stairs that lead to the attic and bark, but they would never go up there. And he would hear, like, footsteps, but also he said he heard, like, old music coming from the attic, too, like, maybe, like, 1930s kind of music.
Oh, man.
And he confirmed it with his sister. She said she heard the footsteps and heard the music, too. I think they tried to convince their parents about it, but either the parents denied it or they just never heard it. But the creepiest thing he told me, well, besides the last thing, the creepiest thing he told me was he said he was in his house. This was when we were in high school. He was in his house one day, and he was on his computer, and it just so happens that the doorway to his room can see down the hall. So he said he was on his computer, and out of the corner of his eye, he saw, like, someone poked their head out of one of the rooms. And he didn't think anything of it until he realized that he was home alone that night.
Right.
So then he looked. Directly at it, didn't see anything, but he knew it was time to get out of the house. And I was so proud of him for doing that. He said, yeah, I'm going to leave until everybody else comes back home.
Yeah, I could see why.
Yeah, so I was like, that's very smart of you. So we stayed friends throughout high school, but then we kind of lost contact when I went to college. But when I came home for the summer of my freshman year, we reconnected and we kind of caught up on everything. And I asked him about his dogs, Buffy and Bambi, because he loves these dogs, and he was really distraught. He said, you know, they had both passed. I think Bambi passed first, but Buffy had passed recently, and he didn't tell me about it at first until later on. He said, well, you know, he told me, like, he had a dream.
Mm-hmm.
He had a dream that Buffy was barking up the stairs, and that the house created a bunch of little Buffies, and the little Buffies attacked Buffy and killed him. And I'm not exactly sure if it was like the next day, like the day he woke up after that dream, or the day after, but it was very soon that Buffy, who was kind of an old dog anyway, but he did fall sick. They had to take him to the vet, and he was put down, like, that day. So he believed, like, even though Buffy was an older dog, he really believed that the house had something to do with him dying.
Oh my. And that, you know, that's extremely sad, the thought that it might extend to the loss of a pet.
It is. And when he told me, I didn't know how to console him because I love the animals too, and I could only imagine how that felt.
Yeah, that's very, very sad. But we do thank you for sharing these stories with us. And thank you so much for your support over the years. It's people like you who make it possible to do what I get to do, which is a lot of fun. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Oh, actually, Jim, I just wanted to say one more thing before we go.
Yes.
The house that I currently live in.
Yes.
I know that it's over 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my family, we've been living in here for like the past 25 years.
Right.
And I we've had no incidents, no paranormal incidents whatsoever, which is great. Although we did learn, talking to one of the older people in the neighborhood, that sometime in the 50s, I guess there was a teenage daughter who lived in here who had snuck a boy into the house one night.
Mm-hmm.
And as he was trying to leave, he decided to go out of the window and he actually fell to his death.
Ooh.
We only learned that maybe about a year ago, which was interesting, but I am glad to say that even knowing that, we still haven't experienced anything in the house. Everything's been peachy, which I'm glad to say.
That is a good thing. Well, thank you again, Marie. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much, Jim.
This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. Now, Valentine's Day is coming soon. So what are you planning for your significant other? Now, I've got to say, from my perspective, for my wife, I mean, the old standbys are great. Dinner, some candy, maybe some jewelry. For me, a woman is really easy to buy for Valentine's Day. I think in my position, you've lucked out, guys out there. But if you're trying to buy for your guy, the man in your life, it's a little bit tougher. What do you get him? Because a lot of guys aren't particularly romantic, unfortunately. Well, I have the answer just in time. A great gift idea is a Harry's razor kit. And just in time for Valentine's Day, Harry's is offering a free engraving on their Chrome Winston razor set. Now, the set includes a razor, three quality blades, and your choice of Harry's shaving cream or foam shave gel. And you save $15 and get the engraved Winston set for just $25 with my code CAMPFIREVALENTINE. Again, that's one single word, CAMPFIREVALENTINE. Now, the giftable Winston set is perfect for Valentine's Day. The engraved set comes wrapped in a sleek box and includes a premium customizable card. Take the hassle out of giving the perfect gift for your guy this year and give the gift of Harry's. Now, a few months ago, Harry sent me the Winston set, which I absolutely love. They've been sending along blades and so forth, and it is just great. I just used it this morning. It was delivered right to my door, and I love the heft of the handle. You could tell that it's quality. They happen to make their blades in a high-quality German razor factory that they actually own. But, you know, all that quality is great and the close shave that I get, but I really love the price. Harry's costs half as much as the razors I used to buy at the store, and I don't even have to have one of those guys go unlock the case anymore. It just comes right to my house, and they're better blades and a much, much better price. And they also have a new aftershave moisturizer that protects and hydrates your skin. It's just really, really good stuff. And the thing that's funny is I notice as I'm getting a little older, I'm becoming very big on practical gifts. Now, this, luckily for me, I was able to work with Harry's and I've been using their razors religiously since then. But this is the kind, as a guy, this would be the kind of gift that I would remember all year long every time I pick it up to shave. So, if you've got to buy for your guy, here's my recommendation. Go to harrys.com now and get a free $15 engraving on the Chrome Winston set with the code CAMPFIREVALENTINE. That's the code CAMPFIREVALENTINE. That's one word, and that is on your first purchase. That's HARRYS.com, and enter coupon code CAMPFIREVALENTINE at checkout. Harry's, a shave good enough to gift for Valentine's Day. And we thank Harry's for their support of the campfire. We have a new listener on the line, Kat. Her cousin told us about the show, so we're very appreciative of that. And she has a story about, well, one of our favorite topics here, the Ouija board. Kat, welcome to the program as a listener and as a contributor. Tell us what happened.
Thank you. All right, so I'm going to start out talking about me and my cousin, and we've always been really close growing up. She actually lives in New Mexico. I live in North Carolina. So over the summer, she came to visit, and we've always been really interested in the supernatural and kind of spooky things. So we kind of wanted to experiment with a Ouija board, and we were talking about it, and I didn't really want to go out and buy one, so we ended up borrowing one from my friend Courtney, and she had originally bought it because her brother had passed away a few years ago, and yeah, she wanted to contact him. So she let us borrow it, and we did it in my room, just in the middle of the floor, and we both kind of like prepared ourselves mentally and told each other, okay, we swore to each other that we were not going to, you know, mess around with each other and fake each other out, basically. And so we began and started asking questions, and immediately we got a response out of this thing, and we started freaking out. We were like, oh my gosh, are you doing that? No. Oh my gosh. So we started asking it questions more and more, and my mom actually came in, and she sat down. She was really like intrigued by it, and we contacted, I don't know what it was or who it was, but we were asking it its age, and I think it said like 72 or something like that. And we asked when it was born and when it died. And we were kind of just sitting there after we had asked it that, we were sitting there kind of calculating in our head, like thinking, oh my God, is that right? And my mom looks at us and she's like, oh my gosh, did you do that on purpose or whatever? But we were all freaking out about it. But, the main thing is that wasn't the scary part about the whole situation. Like, after that had happened, we were continuing to ask the board questions, and it started kind of like not really responding. It was just kind of moving, the piece was just kind of moving about the board, not really giving us clear answers. So we discontinued using it, and we kind of called it a night. We're like still kind of freaked out about it. And so my cousin, she was only at my house for about a week, and she ends up leaving. And I think like a couple weeks passed by, and I'm not even thinking about this anymore. It completely kind of just left my mind. And I have a cat, and my cat sleeps with me at night. And I remember one night I woke up because my cat was making a fuss. He was like kind of walking around my bed, jumping off and on my bed. And I just woke up, and I didn't move. I was looking straight forward. I have like a dresser in front of my bed, and I look forward and I see this person standing by my dresser. And I initially thought, oh my gosh, is that my mom or my dad? I thought it was one of my family members, because it kind of looked like they were looking for something. And I thought maybe they heard something and they came in to check on me, or I don't know. They weren't looking at me though. And then I kind of woke up a little more and started focusing in more on the person. And I just remember my heart started racing because I didn't recognize this person. I couldn't really make out features, but it was a solid figure. And I started thinking it was an intruder.
Right.
And I was just completely freaked out. But then when I started looking more at the outline of this person, it was hunched over in front of my dresser, kind of staring, because I have mirrors in front of my dresser, or on my dresser, and it was almost like it was looking at itself, and it was kind of hunched over and had, like, claw-like hands. Like, it was human, but it wasn't, and it was completely bald. And I just remember not knowing what to do and not knowing if I should, like, scream out for someone or to just sit there and wait to see what this thing would do. And it was almost like I felt even though it didn't look at me, I felt like it kind of, it was aware that I was present, and it was aware that I was looking at it. And it kind of just slowly started moving, like walking back, backwards into, and I have like light coming in through my window, like the moonlight coming in through my window, so I can clearly see its outline or its silhouette. And it just starts moving backwards and kind of just fades off into the shadow of the back of my room. And I just sat there for a minute thinking, what should I do? Is this thing gone? Is it hiding in the dark? What is it doing? And so I turn a lamp on near my bed, and my lamp is very dimmed, so I still couldn't really make out to see if anything was still in my room. So I jumped up from my bed and turned on my light, and nothing was there. And I just remember panicking. I was looking under my couch. I was looking all over the place, like, to see if someone was hiding. And I remember I was calling out to it and everything. Like, I was so terrified. And I mean, I'm not kidding you. Every night after that, a month or two after that, I had my light on as I slept, like every night, because I was so afraid of the dark after that. And eventually I kind of like started turning my bigger light off and just leaving my lamp on next to my bed. But I was so terrified, and I haven't had any encounters after that. But I remember, like, after that, I did some research, and I was looking up. I thought I really did think it was from, like, the Ouija board or something. Right. And I started looking things up, and there's a lot of people that encounter, they're called, like, shadow people.
Oh, yes, we've had many people on the shows talk about shadow people, yes.
Yeah, and I'd never, like, seen anything like that in my life. And it's just stuck in my head. And I know I wasn't dreaming, because my heart was pounding. And, oh my gosh, I'll never forget that, though.
Yeah, that's quite frightening. And Ouija boards, you know, the stories I've heard about them have made me wonder whether they're a portal to something I don't really want to be involved in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, even my boyfriend, he will not go near it, because I remember I asked him one time, hey, let's play with the Ouija board. He's like, no way. No, thank you.
Sounds like a wise man. Well, Kat,
yeah.
Thank you for joining us tonight, for listening to The Campfire.
Thank you.
Well, you remember a few weeks back, Ron Hood from Ron's Amazing Stories joined us, and he had some stories from his listeners that he wanted to share, and did a great reading of a spooky story about a hiker in Oregon. And we're going to kind of continue this motif, Ron, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much.
We're going to talk about a park ranger, lost
a forest
time.
Ranger.
Yeah. And lost time and a glowing beast. It sounds like a curious cocktail. I can't wait to hear it, and I want to thank you for submitting it.
Yeah. Well, this is another person that I actually got to talk to, and the way he tells this story, it sends chills up and down your spine, and I hope I can give it the same justice that he did.
I am a forest ranger who works a fire watch tower in the Sierra Nevada mountains. It's a lonely job with lots of downtime to think. Most believe that all of this is just a figment of my imagination, but I'm here to tell you that it happened. I was up late keeping watch. There had been a large number of lightning strikes over the past few days, and any one of these could lead to a disaster, not only to the forest, but those that live and work in the park. I observed a streak of lightning heading towards the tower. However, it was ground-based and had no connection with the sky. Also, when it struck the ground, there was no sound at all. It was quite near the base of the tower, and it continued to glow. I was concerned about my safety, so I radioed my commander and told her that I was leaving base to check it out. I hopped into my Jeep and drove to the site. I had to hike about a half a mile, and during the walk, I could not get over the feeling that I was being watched. I used my service band radio a couple times just to hear another human voice. My commander kept telling me it was all in my head. That was the last thing I heard from the radio, because as I arrived, it crackled and then was completely drained of all battery life. I was at the outside of a small meadow up against a mound of piled trees. The paddock was obviously a man-made, and I guessed that a small fire had been fought here in the past. Then I saw the glow. It appeared on the side opposite me. It was a humanoid shape about the size of a large black bear on its hind legs. It wavered in and out. At times, it would disappear completely. To say that I was scared is an understatement. I wanted to run, but I could not. I felt as if I had lost my mind, but I was compelled to step out from my hiding place. I said, "Hello?" An eerie tone filled the meadow. It was a low-pitched hum, and it wavered back and forth in a formalized rhythm. After a few seconds, it stopped. I felt a chill go through my body, and I watched in horror as the figure started to move towards me. I could not move. As it got closer, I could see that it was humanoid, but had long arms and very short legs. Its hands could only be described as claws. It got to within 2 feet of me, and I could see its eyes. They were blood red and felt like they could see through my very soul. That was the last thing I remember. I woke up in my Jeep, my assigned call letters pouring from the service radio and frantically asking me to respond. It showed full battery now. A minute later, a chopper was overhead. Its searchlight bathed my Jeep in an intense white light. Although groggy, I was able to activate the mic and respond. I was told later that it had been 1 hour, 15 minutes, and 45 seconds since my last call.
You know, lost time always fascinates me. We've had some great campfire stories about this. I can't figure it out, but it certainly provides some great food for thought. Ron, some other food for thought is your great show, Ron's Amazing Stories. Where can people find it?
Well, you know, I have done some work. I've made that as simple as possible. To find me the easy way, just go to raspodcast.com, and you're going to find me right there. If you're going to do an iTunes search, just search for Ron's Amazing Stories. We'd love to have you aboard. Anybody's welcome to hear my stories.
Well, Ron, thanks for sharing your stories. It's always great to visit with Ron Hood and his amazing stories. You should check that podcast out. It's very good. And we'll have Ron back on with some more stories. Well, Vicky joins us from Ohio, a fellow Buckeye. Always good to talk to one of those. And she has a story that really is, from the little synopsis she gave me, is one of the most unique ones we've ever heard around the campfire. And I would absolutely love for you to hear it, because I think it's, if it lives up to its billing, it's going to be quite a story. Vicky, welcome to the program. I know your son is a loyal listener and kind of introduced you to the show, so thank you both. And tell us your story.
Okay, well, I'm 56, and many years ago when I was 21 and going to college, I took a break. I lived in Minnesota at the time, and I went out to California with a high school friend. And we were invited to what was called a summer solstice. And it was being held by real Wiccans, witches, warlocks, Wiccans. And I'd never been around anything like that. And so she and I thought, that would be interesting. We should go. So we walked up to the house, beautiful, beautiful house. And right from the beginning, it was odd. They had two white cats, perfectly beautiful, huge white cats. One sitting on one side of the step, the other almost directionally across from it, just sitting there as some people would slowly, you know, enter the house. And we went inside. We were there for maybe 20 minutes. And they said, well, let's go back to the pool. It was, as I say, a pretty glamorous house. And we want to show you something on the way back. And so I said, you know, we were okay with that, and we went by, and there was a broom, like a witch's broom, like you would imagine a, not a new broom, but with something very, very, very old.
Right.
And it was in the air. It was suspended independently in the air. And I checked that thing. Debbie was my friend. We looked all around it. And the weirdest, scariest thing about it was it was so still. It was eerie. There was no movement whatsoever in it. And I think that stayed with me more than anything. That stayed with me, that was just so immobile. And again, I looked for string. There were no strings. There was nothing hanging from the ceiling. And I think if there was, you know, it might have moved. I'd never seen anything like it. I've never experienced anything like it since, before that or since. And then to the end of the story, we went in the back and they said, well, you know, maybe 45 people, they had candles everywhere, was, you know, pretty, I guess, Wiccan-like. And they said, you know, we're going to gather around now. We'll share, you know, a few words, whatever they were, I don't recall, except I recall this part. They said, and Debbie and I had split up. You know, we were both a little flipped out about the broom. So we ended up in different parts of the group. And so he randomly chose four corners of the earth, the North Star, the South, East, and West. And he pointed to wherever you were. And I happened to be directly across from her, across from the pool. We were almost facing. Then I didn't realize it until he said, she's the north, you're the south, meaning me. And then there were two other people, like a man and a woman, who were east and west. Well, I didn't give that much thought. Debbie and I, again, we knew each other since grade school. We lost touch over the years. We had kids, college, you know, regular life. Well, we got in touch with each other recently, and we sat down and we talked about that story. And here's this really odd thing to come out of it. She remembers the broom very, very much, and she remembers the stillness of it. And I asked her. I said, "Do you think it was real? Was it real? Was it?" And she said, "I think it was real." And the other thing was, neither one of us could get pregnant. We tried for years. And when, and I didn't know Debbie during this time. She was living her life in Minnesota, and I was living my life in Florida, where I got married and ended up. We both got pregnant with our one and only child the same month, and they were born 9 months later in the same month. And I asked her, I said, "Do you remember when they did that North Star song?" And then they said some Wiccan things. I said, "Did you ever find that odd? Isn't that odd?" And she said, "Yeah, that's really odd." So that's one of my ghost stories. That's
so I guess in one way it turned out it turned out well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, there was nothing bad about it. There was nothing nothing I took away that was frightening at all. I was just mystified by the fact that something could levitate so perfectly.
And there was nobody holding this. It was just suspended in midair.
Suspended in midair, 3 feet, 4 feet from the ceiling, away from the wall. You could walk around it. And the only thing they said is, do not touch it because you will break the spell and it will fall. Hmm. And they seemed very serious. And of course, no one touched it. And that was the only thing they said, don't touch it. because it is a spell and it took us all night to get it to do this.
Well, I'll tell you, that is pretty astounding just to think that something could be levitating. But around the campfire, we don't discount anything. We've heard a lot of wild stories, and this certainly is in that legion. Well, Vicki, thank you. And thank
your son
for being a faithful listener. And we thank you for listening and for being a part of tonight's program.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, and we'll keep listening.
Get all three of Jim's Campfire books of true ghost stories in one new ebook, The Campfire Collection. With over 200 stories, it's now available at jimharaldbooks.com. Now, back to the show.
Next up on The Campfire is Chris from Texas. She's been listening since November and told us that she learned of us from the Huffington Post. I didn't even know we were featured on the Huffington Post, but thank you, Huffington Post. And Chris has a story about the woman in white. Chris, thank you for joining us, and tell us about the woman in white.
Well, the story that I have, it's more my parents had different encounters with her. And I know that the lore is that she comes around most often when someone is about to pass away. And my mom was recounting both of these to us about a month ago. She told my dad's story for him. He's passed away in 2006. But I'll kind of rewind to 1995. He had undergone an amputation for gangrene brought on by diabetes. And he had a pretty significant infection. So he was pretty well medicated and everything. But he was telling her that at some point in the middle of the night, a woman came into his room dressed in all white. And she was in older hospital attire, like when they would wear the dress and the little hat. And everything. And she came to his bedside, and he said, "I know I was medicated. I know I had a fever," but she came to my bedside and touched my shoulder and put her finger to her lips to tell me to be quiet, and it was okay, and went around the curtain to the next patient, as he was in a shared room, went around the curtain, and not a minute later, they called the code to his room, and in came the medical staff, and out went the woman, but he never saw her leave. And she was, you know, when they finally cleared the room out entirely and pulled the curtain, like, there was nobody in there. So he saw her go to whomever was in the room with him, but never saw her come back out. And that patient passed away. And the next one, actually, mine's a little hard to tell. It was when he passed away. My mother saw her. And she said it was the middle of the night. You know, you can't sleep. If you're a person who's well and in a hospital with a sick person, it's very difficult to sleep.
Yeah, sure.
Just because people are in and out, and the noises and the commotion that's in there. And she said it was about 1 or 2 in the morning. He was having a hard time, so she was just sitting up in the chair in the room with him. And in walks this woman who never would turn to look at her. And she was wearing all white and went to his bedside and walked back out. Never looked at her, never acknowledged her. And he passed away in a few days from that incident.
Wow. So, oh, that's something else.
Yeah, and my mother has interesting abilities, but she is a very, very big skeptic. So, of course, she could, you know, maybe it was a doctor, whatever she was, but she wasn't dressed like anyone on the floor. So, yeah, so it was really a jarring experience for her, but I've never spoken to any, you know, she's the only person I know that's seen her and not, you know, not had a experience of being the person that passed away.
Wow.
That's with
the
lady in white.
Yeah. So, you know, I've heard of the woman in white in that lore. So to actually hear somebody who has experienced it twice, Through your family members and so forth is pretty unique. Well, Chris, I know you took time out of your busy day to be on the program. I want to thank you very much for it and sharing this very personal and poignant story.
Oh, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it, and I love you so.
Thank you. Thanks so much for tuning into The Campfire. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope that you'll share your story by going over to jimherald.com/campfire. Please tell your friends on Facebook, Twitter, or just somebody you know who's interested in the paranormal. Hey, check out this Campfire show, and listening to podcasts are easier than ever. It's the hot thing these days. Guess I'm a bit of a newcomer. I've only been doing it for 10 years. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for your support, and we'll talk to you next time. Stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.